Hey guys, this is Anthony Bandier here, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing you another search and seizure show. I'm broadcasting from Las Vegas. I just got done doing a webinar on plain view and plain feel. I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Chris McFarland. Chris, this is the first time I believe you actually joined us or wrong on the search and seizure show. Is this the first time?
That is correct. It has been the first time I have been able to with my work schedule.
Okay, so do me a favor. Can you just give a quick, 1 minute, 2 minute max, Reader's Digest about who you are and your connection to Blue to Gold?
Absolutely. So I've been with Blue to Gold now since beginning of 2023. I'm an attorney, current officer. I'm a lieutenant over the training division of Charleston County Sheriff's Office, former state prosecutor in Arkansas, and love teaching. That's what I do, whether I'm teaching, with Blue to Gold, teaching in-house, training. Teaching is my passion. It's my career. I have a little bit of a background in academia as well in South Carolina. So, and I still teach actively at some universities across the country.
Is it safe to say that teaching a room full of cops is 10 times more fun? I mean, this is for me, than teaching a room full of university students? Or you like both equally?
No, absolutely. Teaching officers is a lot better just simply because they want to be there most of the time. They want to learn, and they're actually invested in what we're talking about and what we're learning.
Yeah. And look, I've taught at the college level, at least. I was at a community college. I wasn't, up to your level, my friend. But I love the students, but it's just, I love, because you get, when it comes to, brand new, university students, look, and I've had a lot of fun, teaching them this stuff. But when you teach a room full of cops, they just ask such great questions, and they're doing the Lord's work, like, right now, so we can really help them. All right.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what I want to do here is, if you have a question, I think some people actually had a question during the webinar that I did not get to. This is when you ask the question. All you got to do is say, I have a question. We'll turn on your mic. No video. The only people you can see is me and Chris and Matt as our first customer on deck. All right. So let's see, Matt. Hold on. Let me get to you, Matt. All right, Matt. It'll ask you to turn on your mic.
Okay. Can you hear me?
What's up, buddy?
So background is, detectives receive a cyber tip from a internet crimes against children unit regarding a suspect having child pornography. As they're investigating, they're able to get a search warrant for the house for cell phones and computers. While they execute the warrant, the detectives interview the suspect and get a confession, and they end up arresting him. The suspect pleads guilty at his next court hearing, but the cell phones and computers are still being dumped at the lab.
Yep.
So the question is, can the detectives still go through that evidence? And if they locate additional pictures, videos, different times, different dates, can they charge him with those as well? Or now that that case is closed and that evidence was found from that case, can they no longer use it?
Okay. So just so you know, I don't know if you know this, but I actually, last week, we spoke about this with me and Mike Boone, and unfortunately, we had a brand new setup for our podcast. And the audio did not come out okay. So that's why we actually did not publish your answer. But I have researches, but I want to give Chris, do you want to take a stab at this first? Because it's back on our list because we weren't able to finish that last week. Chris, do you have a input on this first?
Yeah, I think where I'm looking at this from is, as a former prosecutor, I think the question that I'm going to have, if you bring that to me, is, was the evidence that you subsequently found in the individual's possession before they pled or after the fact? Did you find it after the fact, saying that, did they have possession after that initial charge and case was adjudicated? I think that's one of the questions that's going to be asked from the prosecution standpoint there.
So, well, I think he had possession of it before, because obviously it's on his cell phone, right? Is that what you're saying? We have his cell phone. It's on here, but he pleads. And then we find it later. Like, we learned that the gravity of the offense was maybe a little bit more, was a lot more than we initially thought. Is that maybe, Matt, kind of also what the deal is? That his plea is not good enough? That you want to hit him with some more charges?
Yeah, so, like, we find more counts or more videos, or maybe videos of him doing something to someone. Can we still use all that? Or now is that evidence gone from that case?
So I think that, like Anthony always says, change your facts, change your answer on that. I think if you're if you're finding additional material, especially material that's more severe, maybe videos instead of pictures, I think that's definitely going to be something at least noteworthy to bring back to your prosecutor and try to, you know, do more charges, because I think oftentimes charges develop later on in investigations. I mean, I know I've been involved in prosecutions where, you know, the charge is one thing, and then through this investigation that's actually going on while the trial is proceeding, mm-hmm. we find more evidence, and that changes things at that point.
Now, Chris, here's what I came up with, and I want to know what you think, okay? I think there's two things going on here. I think at the end of the day, the best way that I can look at this is double jeopardy, right? Double jeopardy is basically the guy has pled guilty, and double jeopardy prevents us from going back after him for the same crime with the same elements. That's what double jeopardy is, going after him for the same crime and using the same evidence. So same evidence, same elements. We can't do that. However, we don't have double jeopardy here, because Matt is not going after this guy for the same crime. You know, he pled guilty for having those three images, whatever it is, but we want to go after him for the three videos. That is different evidence. It's the same elements, but different evidence, not double jeopardy. He has not been adjudicated, or he has not gone through a trial on those issues and found not guilty. Would you agree that that's probably a good way to look at it?
Absolutely. And that's even why I prefaced the very first question that I did. You know, is it something that he had or didn't have in his possession initially? And then subsequently I followed that up with, you know, are the charges going to be different based
that's
on
right.
the new evidence?
It's new. It's different. It's different counts. Now, the other thing, Chris, I spoke to my friends in Las Vegas that are prosecutors here, and I asked them their opinion on this because I thought it was a very good question. And here's another thing that they told me. They said the other thing that they would be cautious of is during the plea negotiations, right? What was part of that plea negotiation? Was it kind of like, hey, you're pleading guilty to, you know, everything on your phone, right? You know, in other words, what did the prosecutor and the defendant contemplate as the plea arrangement? And the reason why they said this is they said, look, it's not going to necessarily prevent us from going after him for more charges, especially when we were blind to like how guilty this guy was on other charges. However, they said, you know, when we argue pleas, we argue in good faith. And, you know, it's not good for business. It's not good for the courts if we are now changing our tune and be like, yeah, you know, you can, you know, there is evidence here that we were negotiating with him to basically plea everything out. We want his plea for an easy case, but now we're going to kind of change our position and just go after him. Instead of sending him to prison for 10 years, we want to send him there for 40 years. There is this kind of, you know, maybe gentleman's agreement that pleas should be honored. But again, it comes back to what was contemplated. What do you think about that, Chris?
Absolutely. I mean, in any part of plea negotiations, good faith is always one of the first things that's discussed on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
For the state and the defense.
Matt, what do you think about our answer?
That's perfect. I appreciate you guys.
Damn right, it's perfect. You know, when you come to Blue to Gold, you know, this is what we do here, my friend, okay? All right. Hey, where are you at, by the way?
What's in Mountain Village, Colorado.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'm glad you jumped on. So have a good one. We're going to let you go, and then we're going to get who's next? I think Brian is next. Brian, you on deck? Brian. Please, Brian, please. I'm begging you. Please do not throw me over the curveball of some firefighter EMS question. I'm just a humble person trying to get by on search and seizure, okay? So don't go over my head and start talking some EMS stuff to me. Oh, wait, Carl. I'm sorry. I hit the wrong one. Sorry, Carl. Hold on. Sorry. C comes after B. Where's Brian? There he is.
Okay. So a friend of my son was involved in a little situation at school.
Uh-huh.
He kept himself plugged in on a computer, walked away.
Mm-hmm.
The other child went and got on his computer and started looking up things like how to shoot up a school, how to bomb school, whatever.
Right, so, under his login.
Yes, yeah. Yep. So anyways, eventually it was found. They took my son's friend in to be questioned by an SRO, and I want to say his assistant principal, and it was more of an interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like. And so the parent was asking me, hey, was this legal? And I was like, well, what was the situation? And I was like, the biggest thing is, did he feel like he could leave? And the kid said, hey, I could have left. Yeah, so apparently he didn't feel like he could leave. So,
oh, right. He was like surprised. What do you mean? I could have left. I had a choice. That was his reaction. What do you mean? I had a choice. I didn't have to talk.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Come to find out, the other kid did confess that he did it.
Yep.
But through all that, my question is, was that considered a seizure for the officer sitting on the opposite side of the table? There's two officers, actually, two SROs and a principal, and they were sitting between him and the door.
Mm-hmm.
And parents were never called, stuff like that. That was an issue also.
Right. That might be a Texas law thing, by the way. Not all states require that, right? And yes. I think Texas actually does require notification to juveniles' parents. But let's talk about the Fifth Amendment. Let's talk about the Fourth Amendment. So at the end of the day, the question is, was that person seized under the Fourth Amendment? And the second question is, did we have a Miranda violation potentially? Is that also the question?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
No Miranda was given.
Miranda was or was not given?
Was not given.
Okay, good. Chris, answer the first question. Do you think based on the TOC, to T to the O to the C, totality of circumstances, that this was a seizure under the Fourth Amendment? And what would be the standard that we need there?
We've got an individual that was brought in through his own actions, admitted he didn't know that he was free to leave, was put in a room, and I believe you said that there were two SROs sitting across the table from him.
Kind of blocking his path.
Yeah.
And you're blocking the path to the door. So I think that's going to be successfully a seizure under the Fourth Amendment.
And Chris, just I don't want to we have a lot of questions here, but also, you think the courts will consider the kid's age as part of whether or not they were seized?
Absolutely.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we do have a seizure. A seizure occurs when the government does something or says something to lead a reasonable person to believe, and age is a factor, that they are not free to leave, and they comply. This kid complied. He did not run from the room, obviously, so he seized. The next factor is, do you think this was a lawful seizure with the facts that you know of, how you know them? I mean, we have very limited facts. We only have, we have the telephone game here, right? Brian is giving as much facts as possible, but based on what Brian is telling us, do we have a lawful seizure, yes or no? Brian, are you still there? I'm sorry,
Chris.
Not Brian.
I'm sorry.
Chris. I'm sorry. I meant to say Chris. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you. Chris.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you think we have a lawful seizure, Chris? Sorry, Brian.
At this point, it's going to be hard to say knowing on the facts that we've got, but just going based on what I've got, I'm going to say no at this point.
Whoa. You have school officials, right? Have objective evidence that this kid is planning a school attack. They have no idea that another person, I mean, even if they're told it wasn't me, but they have objective evidence, it's clearly they have a search history that this kid's planning a school shooting or attack. You don't think that the school is allowed to temporarily detain him, including the police officers, that either one is allowed to detain him to try to figure out if there's actually a criminal activity going on here?
Wait, which kid are we talking about?
The innocent kid. Brian's, right?
Absolutely, because it's under his name.
Correct. It sucks to be him. Maybe, I guess the lesson here is to make sure you log out of your computer, right? And it sucks to be him. It's happened, shit. It could happen.
If he worked somewhere, he would have to take training on make sure he does that.
Yeah.
Well,
but,
I mean, I'm kind of going Brian. With not to do this or do this or not do this in the future. It's kind of like a learning situation from another officer perspective. Is this something I should never do myself, or is it okay to do, or was there exigency in the safety of the school and the well-being of the school involved also? Would that play into it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, any school case, I mean, you have the Supreme Court time and time again saying that a school is a special place, right? That a school is, the rules are going to be looser in a school, whether it's drug testing students, whether it's Miranda, I'm going to tell you, and we're going to get to Miranda in a second, whether it's Florida versus JL, where cops had anonymous tip, that a young man in a plaid shirt had a gun at a bus stop, and they said that that was not okay. There was not specific events or, you know, factors to detain that man. But they then said, put that same call in a sensitive place, like a school, like an airport or whatever, and you change, and then you're allowed to maybe do a detention. The point is, schools are always treated more, they're always more protected to protect our children, and they're going to loosen up the rules. So, I mean, the New Jersey versus TLO or TLO versus New Jersey, which was in it, Chris? But anyway, it's what?
TLO versus New Jersey.
TLO versus New Jersey. Tammy Lee Owens that they said that when it comes to school enforcement of rules and regulations, we don't need the probable cause. We need reasonable suspicion. So clearly we have reasonable suspicion. So look, I am absolutely good with this detention. Unquestionably. Okay. Unquestionably. It sucks to be him, but if it is what it is. The school has an obligation, by the way, to do something to make sure that there's no imminent danger. Now let's talk about the interrogation. Let me start with this. So generally speaking, Miranda does not apply to school principals or their staff. And I think it's because of reality, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not realistic. I think the Supreme Court realizes that these Miranda rules, which already are kind of confusing for cops, is no way to effectively educate our school officials to read Miranda before interviewing or interrogating, because the guy's detained, interrogating this kid. So Miranda did not apply. Now, the question, though, is, was this a police interrogation or was this a school interrogation? It sounds to me, if the school, the cops are just there to stand guard and make sure the situation is safe, then it actually is primarily a school investigation, okay? And I know that they helped with the detention because they're blocking the door. But we've already answered the question about whether or not the detention was valid. The next question is, was Miranda required? I think the answer is no. I think the answer is no. I think that if you probably looked at this, and we had a video of this, we're probably going to see an interrogation primarily conducted by school officials, and Miranda is not applied to school officials.
The kid said he was talked to by the SROs. The principal really didn't ask him any questions. It was mainly by the SROs.
I mean, look, that's traditional, right? I mean, a lot of times school officials will try to pawn a lot of things off onto law enforcement just because they know kids especially are a lot more willing to cooperate with us than they're going to be a school official because they see us more as an authority figure.
Was he correct? I totally agree. And was he in handcuffs, Brian?
No, sir.
No?
Nope.
Then I say no Miranda anyway. I mean, even if this was an interrogation motivated and run by school or by SROs, I don't still think Miranda's required. Miranda's required when there are three things. Arrest-like custody. I don't see arrest-like custody here. I see a detention. Being not free to leave is an important factor, but it's not the only factor. I see asking incriminating questions. I guess you could have that here. And you have a known government agent. Like we know that this is the police asking us, not an undercover cop, for example. So here, I don't think we have arrest-like custody. I don't think that the court is going to say, based on only what I have here, that the court's going to say, based on this, a reasonable person would think that they're going to jail. Right? At the end of the day, the kid was actually innocent. But the point is, we're just asking, like, what's going on here? And I'm sure he was like, no, I didn't do it. You know, another kid must have done it and so forth. So I think it's unfortunate for the kid. It's traumatic to be accused of something as heinous as potentially, being involved in a school shooting and so forth. It's very traumatic. He's probably a good kid. But unfortunately, the schools, I think, did what they were allowed to do and they should have done based on what they knew at the time. That's how I see it.
Hey, Brian. Just for my clarification, are you an SRO right now?
No, sir.
Okay, well,
I say that we're in my small department where everybody's everything. So,
And the reason I ask is this: I think just for future reference, and you alluded to this, I want to make sure that I do it right when I'm working. Look, I think procedurally here there was probably some things that could have been done better. Having the school officials talk with the individuals first, and using that to kind of build and provide law enforcement with more. I don't want to say evidence, but more facts about what actually was going on, and then let law enforcement approach that in a way that if evidence is elicited from them, it's going to be protected, it's going to be good, and we're not going to run into suppressing issues if we get anything. Okay. I think that's just kind of, people getting excited, people putting the cart before the horse, so to speak, and that happens a lot of time, especially with school investigations.
Yeah, good advice.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, you're welcome. All right, who has a who has a question? We're running out of time a little bit just because I have to leave for another class here. But who has another question? Emmanuel. All right, let's get Emmanuel on the line. Emmanuel, also, when you jump on deck, tell us what state you're from.
Yeah, no problem. Can you hear me good?
Loud and clear, my friend.
All right, I'm from Maryland. I work for the Harford County Sheriff's Office here.
Right, very cool. All right, cool. What you got?
All right, so a little situation we had yesterday, we were kind of like thinking about it, like, damn, could we not? We're at one of our local motels, so the rooms are on the outside, you know.
Yep.
Lock somebody up on a warrant, got somebody else on a warrant. And while we're standing there, a motorcycle rides by us and has no plates. And then I see the guy, my coworker sees the guy park the motorcycle in front of his motel room and then left it uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm there, I'm looking around and I'm like, yo, you saw that motorcycle? It has no plates.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get motorcycle thefts and so forth, whatever.
Yep.
So then I go and the owner of the motel is like, hey, is everything okay in that room? The room where, you know, locking these people up for the warrant.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man, everything's good. But then I go, hey, man, who's that over there with the motorcycle? And he goes, I think some guy is just staying here and whatever. So I'm like, no plates, motorcycle, sports bike.
Yeah.
We'll take a look. Well, then he comes outside with a shiesty on, like a face mask. That's, you know, covers the bike up.
Shiesty.
And then he runs. He goes back inside the room.
Yep.
So then I look at my coworkers. I'm like, I'm about to go check out that bike. And they were like, whoa, wait a minute. He covered it up. I don't think you could do that. I'm like, well, we have a violation. Had no plates on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a motel room. It's not like one of my supervisors was like, oh, no, you're going to violate the Collins rule. I'm like, Collins is curtilage.
Correct.
That's not curtilage. That's in front of a motel room, like on a sidewalk.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Trying
yeah,
to say?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not curtilage. Yep.
So my question is, because we were all discussing this and then we kind of like let it go. We're like, well, we can't make a decision here. So we get them next time.
Okay.
Would I have been okay just to go there, either do a knock and talk or lift up the car cover to see the VIN of the bike?
All right. Before I jump in here and I want Chris to take a stab at this too, let me ask you one clarifying question. Under what you knew at the time, let's forget the whole, you know, car cover thing. I'm going to talk about it in a second. I want to separate these two things out. Did you have the authority, if you never covered up the bike and you went over to that bike and you can see the VIN in plain view, okay, you do not have to manipulate and touch that bike, and you ran that VIN and the bike is not stolen, but it is unregistered, would you have the authority under law to leave a ticket on that bike?
If the bike was car cover off, we saw him ride in it, we saw him go in, yes, I would have knocked on the door like, you know, who are you? Here's your tickets for driving unregistered motor vehicle. Yeah.
Because you had probable cause that he drove it in the street. That's what you're saying. You saw it coming from the street?
Yeah. He was coming down the highway, pulled into the whole motel. I guess he didn't see us initially. Then he saw us and then parked it right in front of his room.
Right. Because it's not illegal in Maryland to have an unregistered motorcycle in a parking lot, but it is illegal to drive it on the street. And you have PC for that. So we're clear on that. Okay.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. I have your answer. Chris, what do you think? I think I have your answer. What do you think, Chris?
So on this one, you know, I think back to a case that we teach oftentimes about being, did you have probable cause prior to what you did or did you not have probable cause?
Like,
Anthony, you have probable cause for the traffic infraction. I think going beyond that might be where you get into a little bit of issue, you know, with manipulating things, moving things, going underneath things.
So here's how I look at it, Chris, and you tell me what you think. I think that they can lift up the cover. And the reason is because before he put the cover on, they had probable cause for an infraction, okay? Yes, this is not a felony in what, Maryland, these are civil infractions, right? But, right, Emmanuel, they're civil.
Yeah, it's just like a must appear citation, right?
Yep, exactly. It's not criminal. But we also know that before marijuana became legalized in Maryland, that was civil too for adults, and we were allowed to search cars for civil violations. So we have that case. I think the case is actually, I want to say Johnson, but don't quote me on it. But anyway, this is the way I look at it, Chris. The cop, Emmanuel, told us very clearly he has probable cause for that vehicle. Now, can he actually write a citation? The answer is yes. How are we going to write a citation if we don't know what vehicle to describe? Therefore, we lift up the car cover, the bike cover, to get the VIN number to put, that's part of our citation, but he has probable cause for that vehicle. The vehicle did commit a violation, and we can gather evidence about that violation. Part of the evidence is identifying information. the VIN. We're not looking for, you know, but when we run the VIN, part of our citation, if it comes back stolen, then that's another issue. But the VIN is our, we get the VIN. We get the VIN because we get the citation. If this officer was not able to articulate that he could write him a citation, there is no PC for anything, then the answer is no, because we can't just snoop around people's motorcycles and pull off their car covers, because that would be a search under Jones. It ain't a Collins issue. Collins is a curtilage case. This is not curtilage. Motels, hotels, and Holiday Inn almost never have curtilage. What does have curtilage is homes, single-family homes, usually. However, we have PC for a violation. Chris, but Jones. So when you take off the car cover, is that a search under the Fourth Amendment? 100% yes, right, Chris? Under Jones? Yes. Jones, yeah. Is that GPS case?
Wrote down as he was asking and kind of telling us what was going on, is you're going to have strong articulation here. And I know that's one of our three golden rules.
Yep.
You know, making sure that you're articulating, you're tying why you need to bring that VIN in, why you need that VIN. And like I said, if you've got probable cause, and I don't think there's a problem with that, but it's when you don't have probable cause, and when you start lifting the covers up and going into things, I think that's when you run into a problem. So exactly. Maybe I didn't clarify that well enough, but yeah, I think we're right on point with what you're saying there.
And Chris, we actually teach a case where in our full day class where cops, you know, wanted to lift up a car cover on a street bike in a parking lot, but they had a hunch or maybe even reasonable suspicion that the bike might have been being cooled off in a parking lot of a high crime area, but the cops couldn't do it because they don't have probable cause.
Absolutely.
And you can't search with reasonable suspicion. So Ryan says, what about the foregone conclusion? Well, foregone conclusion won't apply here because foregone conclusion for what? Right? Emmanuel definitely doesn't have a foregone conclusion that the bike is stolen. I think he has reasonable suspicion. I think he does. Oh, absolutely. He has reasonable suspicion for a stolen motorcycle. No plate, a street bike are commonly stolen. Motel, you know, maybe that's a factor for you, especially if it's a high crime area. By definition, motels are high crime because their doors are outside. And the final thing is that he puts a car cover over it when he sees the popo. So I think you have reasonable suspicion. You just don't have probable cause. All right, Emmanuel, that's where we're at. You good?
Yep, I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Man, it's a great question. All right. We're going to read some other questions before we get out of here. Does anybody have any other questions on the mic? But in the meantime, Freddie, do you have a question? Yeah, actually, Emmanuel, what's funny, just so you know, I actually had your question right here. We were going to talk about it today, and I'm glad you actually got on the microphone. So sorry for the delay, but we'd like to answer these live. Okay, real quick. Emmanuel, okay, one second. Let's answer this question, and then Chris, let's be real quick. No. Emmanuel, you want to answer this now? I'd rather answer it now if you have time. Oh, after Chris. Okay, Chris, real quick. Case out of Wyoming. Status offense. I pull over a vehicle for a traffic stop, and the driver is under 21. I see nicotine vape pen in the center console, which is illegal to possess, right? You can't smoke it under 21, which is, I think, stupid. But not matter what, you don't care about my politics. Can I search the vehicle based on the motor vehicle exception?
Yeah. So, I mean, you just have to appreciate the scope of the exception of what you can search for.
What about searching the air box and engine compartment?
I mean, it's
probably not, right?
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, you have to ask yourself reasonability anytime you're concerning scope of something.
Look, it is what it is. I talked about this last week, but again, the sound didn't really work. I think this is, I don't like it because I just think it's so silly to search a grown man's car. The guy's 20 years old for cigarettes. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's wrong. I think it's stupid that the guy is going to be potentially getting his car searched by the government because he smokes a pack of Marlboros. However, at the end of the, it's just my full, I don't smoke and I don't plan to smoke, but I think this is kind of an insult that your government can get into your car over Marlboros as you can go to war. But this is my prerogative. I don't think I would search this man's car because I think it's a stupid law. But can you do it? I think the answer is yes. Would you agree? As long as the scope, right, Chris?
Yeah, scope.
Okay. All right. So, Emmanuel, one more time. Let's get you on deck. And then, All right. What's the next question?
All right. I'm back.
All right. What you got?
So next question is extremely similar to the previous question.
Okay.
Again, in Maryland, so Maryland, obviously, odor of marijuana is not PC anymore. That's fine. But under the age of 21, it is still illegal to possess, but it's just a civil citation. And here's the facts. My coworker is watching traffic, and he sees a car react to his presence. All the occupants look at him. Two of them have shiesties on, and he's like, okay. And then they break immediately, like a crazy, like they just slammed the anchor down. So then he says he follows the car, he finds an infraction, and then he stops the car. When he stops the car, he got some backup. He asks the occupants to exit the car. When they exited the car, he saw that they had a little bit of marijuana, but he said he smelled fresh marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was like, he confirmed that they were all under the age of 21.
Yep.
And he says the driver was extremely like nervous, you know, like trying to distance himself from the car. It's not his car. Like, oh, I don't know what's in the car, etc. My coworker, he's fairly new, but I told him I think he's good. My coworker then, because of the age, under the age of 21, he confirmed that. They pat everybody down. They got consent to pat everybody down. Mm-hmm. And then he searched the car, obviously, for the marijuana because he sees that they're under 21.
Okay.
In a satchel, another thing too, the driver had his knee against the center console against a satchel.
Mm.
Pulls him out the car. They do that. He searches the car. His first place he goes to is a satchel, and he finds a gun.
Yep.
Okay, and of course it went from there.
Yep.
The leadership and like the state's attorneys was like, not good, not a good search at all. That's going to be suppressed and everything like that. I said, I don't think so, man, because under 21, you confirmed that they're under 21. They have marijuana in possession. It's a civil citation. That is contraband and and you need to search the passenger compartment for it.
Right.
So the question is, like, is he good or not?
Yeah. And look, and actually what's funny is, you know how I feel about cigarettes. I think it's just stupid. I think it's an overreach. But when it comes to marijuana, I'm fine with it. And the case is actually, I was right. It was actually Johnson. It's Johnson versus State. You want to write this down? Here, actually, I'll put it into it's Johnson versus State 254, Maryland Appellate 353, 2022. Now, it corrected my thing. 254 Maryland app. It goes like this. Okay, you see that? So here's the deal. So Johnson is an adult marijuana case, okay? But, and this is before you guys legalized marijuana for recreational use. So you so far with me, right? But what happened in Johnson is that Johnson is saying, hey, at the time that they searched my car, right? In Maryland, it's a civil infraction. Remember those days, right? It wasn't criminal. It's still civil for what, 10 grams or less?
Yes.
So what he says, because all you smell is marijuana and you don't have any articulation that it's over 10 grams, making it criminal, then you can't search my car. And the court, and I mean, it's not a court of appeals case, you know, which is the highest court in Maryland, but it's Maryland. I don't think it is. But anyway, the court still said, look, it's still illegal. It's not, you know, it's civil. The outcome is civil, right? What you get is a fine. You ain't going to jail. You're probably going to get diversion and so forth. But the court said, and I'm trying to paraphrase here, but it says the bottom line is that contrary to the interpretation of Section 5-601.1, solemnly urged upon us by this appellant and by others, basically that you can't search cars because of a civil infraction, a finding of a guilty of a code violation of this law has definitely not received the good housekeeping seal of approval. The possession or use of marijuana in any amount has not become normal or proper behavior. It is still illegal in a strict sense, right? You can still get a violation for it, right? And one may still be issued a summons and so forth. So now take Johnson, and that doesn't apply to adults anymore. If we have a smell of raw marijuana coming from a vehicle and nothing else, we can't search that car. You would agree for an adult right now?
Yes, I agree.
But now apply Johnson to juveniles. So we move it down the ladder here. It's still illegal for juveniles to have it. We still have a violation. We can seize that evidence for that violation so that we do go to court on it, because it's still a preponderance of the evidence case, right? We don't need beyond reasonable doubt because it's a civil case, but it's preponderance of evidence. We want evidence of that. We want evidence that, Your Honor, not only did I smell the marijuana, but guess what? I found the marijuana, right? Are you going to go to court and we're going to try to get a conviction on this case with no evidence? You know what I'm saying? Where's the evidence? Anyway, you get my point. So the answer is that we can search it. If you can't search it, then you have really no cases, right? How are you going to get your evidence? Is that's the way I look at it. You good?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I told him too, I was like, man, who's the state's attorney that's telling you this? Because like, what are you going to do? Give him a civil citation and let him keep that marijuana? Like, yeah, like, man, of course. Go ahead with your marijuana.
Yeah, this ain't New Jersey. Because in New Jersey, actually, that's what they do, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, I'm from Jersey, you know.
You're from Jersey?
Yeah.
I'm from New Jersey. I'm from, I was born in Long Branch, but raised in Vegas. Where are you from?
Carteret. It's like exit 12 on the turnpike.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for you. You're sorry for me, man. New Jersey is not the best place.
There's a reason he's not policing in New Jersey anymore.
Yeah, but look, I got a beef with Maryland too. I mean, I do like Maryland more, but you guys still have crappy gun laws. Chris, anything to add to this?
No, I think we've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, I think it really comes down to that. You got to have evidence of it. And, just for your curiosity, I think the reason the state's attorney is going to tell you that is just because of the political culture today.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt. Yep. And Brooks told me that Shiesty is a brand. I thought Shiesty was like a nickname of like calling a person a mope, you know, just moping around or a perp or something like that. But Shiesty is a brand. I think it's funny because it sounds shiesty. I don't know. I would probably not wear a shiesty personally, but that's fine.
We call it shiesty because all the kids from Baltimore that come up here to commit, you know, crimes, they all have it. The face mask, all you see is their eyes.
Right, right. But are you talking about a brand name or just that is the name you call it? It's a shiesty. Look, they look
shiesty. I just call it, we just call it a shiesty.
Thank you. That's what I thought. That's why shiesty. I guess, but it's also, apparently it's also a brand name of something. So, okay.
I didn't know.
Okay, well then I took it like you meant it. Okay, good.
Exactly.
Which is funny. I do think it's a very clever name for a person who's hiding their identity. Okay.
An adjective, not a noun.
Huh?
An adjective, not a noun.
Right, right.
Exactly. I love the comments from Kevin and Bradley there. You know, there's always recruiting and everything you go to.
Yeah, go to Florida. All right. Thanks, Emmanuel. The last question we're going to do, Chris, is we're going to do this one from a cop from Texas. Let's be real quick on this one because I got to take off here. This cop is from Texas. He says verbal interference with police duties in Texas. At what point does verbal distraction constitute interference, obstruction? Right. I know we haven't looked up the code in Texas, but I think we can answer this in a constitutional manner. I know there's a defense in our law for First Amendment and so forth, but it's a huge issue in our city where family and friends show up on scene and begin recording and occasionally leads to encounters. I understand the record. There's no issues in recording. We know that a person has a clearly established right to record police encounters in a public place performing a public act, right? But what is a good practice to maintain a safe distance and be able to safely conduct our job when being engaged by bystanders who may or may not have affiliation with the contact or the, you know, they're just basically interjecting themselves? Seems to me that distraction in and of itself could be interference given other factors. Chris, let's give some good advice to these police officers out there so they make good case law. What would you tell an officer that's dealing with these distraction cases?
You know, look, this goes back to kind of what I was telling about our Maryland case there with the motorcycle. You're going to have strong articulation on this one because the thing that's going to be argued in court is interference, quote, interference. What constitutes that? And I think you're going to have to be reasonable about it. You know, I think just to say, well, I was distracted by someone's presence, I don't think that's going to get you there. I think you're going to have to articulate a lot more than that.
Yeah.
To make a sound arrest or even a detainment on that and not be in trouble. You know, oftentimes, and this is what I would encourage officers to look at, are there other crimes that's being committed by the individuals that are quote unquote distracting to you?
Yep.
While you're in the performance of your job, because I think that's going to give you your better legal foothold to take legal action against those individuals on. But I'm not comfortable just saying, oh, their presence was a mere distraction to me, or maybe they were yelling curse words and that's why I did what I did. I think you're going to have more than that.
Yeah. And I love the comments, by the way. Brooks, you are firing off cylinders today. I just love the comments. And for those people who are watching this on demand, you're missing out on this. I mean, our live audience is just the best. It's absolutely the best. They give us information, context. But let me just teach you what I teach here, okay? First of all, we are a person verbally interfering with you, just yelling at you and so forth, is not obstruction in any state. A person has a First Amendment right to challenge what you're doing. You're violating their rights, whatever they want to say. They have a right to speak, okay? And what I say It's not that your job has become inefficient. That's not obstruction in any state. Generally speaking, in any state, when people take away your focus, when they yell at you, when they, you know, cause you to be distracted, that's making you less efficient. But that is a First Amendment right, basically, you know, for the most part. I'm talking about when they say First Amendment activity stuff, right? I'm not every word coming out of their mouth is First Amendment. However, being distracted or being taking away your focus is not unconstitutional, or I'm sorry, not against the law. What I'm looking for is where you cannot do your job, right? Maybe not, you can't do your job. It's not efficiently. I look for the word effectively. You cannot do your job effectively because of what's going on with them. That means, for example, they're yelling at you, you know, near your traffic stop, and they're yelling so loud or have a bullhorn that you can't even talk to your violator. You have the right for time, place, manner to be like, hey, look, say what you want, but say it either A, farther away so I can talk to my violator, or B, say what you want, but lower your volume so I can talk to my violator. That's the type of response that we're looking for. Chris is 100% spot on, where at Blue to Gold, we teach you guys, focus on conduct, not content. Who gives a shit what they say, okay? You don't care. It's not what they say for the most part. They can say whatever they want for the most part. It's how they act. What are they doing that is violating the law? And don't get wrapped up in First Amendment auditors. Generally speaking, you should not be nitpicking them on having one foot in the roadway and now you're going to arrest them. I would not personally do that because that seems to be a little spiteful. I would just focus on, hey, I can't do my job. Finally, I want to say that this whole foot rule, okay? Arizona tried, an 8-foot rule, a 7-foot rule, whatever it was. Now, Florida has, a 12-foot rule. I want to tell you it's all bullshit. There is no foot rule, you know, in the law, okay? And every time a state is going to try to pass, you have an obligation to move back 12 feet from a traffic stop or whatever it is. It's all bullshit. It's all unconstitutional, facially invalid. There is no 12-foot rule. It's articulation rule. Just articulate that in this case, I need you to get back 20 feet. In this case, I need you to get back 3 feet. And I talk about the nightclub example, right, Chris? I go into the nightclub and I'm investigating a battery. And there's all these people around and they got their phones out and they're like 5 feet because the nightclub is so packed. And I'm in Florida. And I say, hey, the law requires you guys to get back 8 feet. And they crush each other to death. I mean, the thing is, it's not an 8-foot rule. It's a circumstances rule. Would you agree with that, Chris? Just absolutely. Use
what I would encourage officers to keep in mind is you don't want to limit yourself by looking for some type of bright line rule on exactly how many feet away you need to be. It's just it goes back to articulation. Can you articulate that their conduct was reasonably interfering with your duties and preventing you from being able to do your job?
Yep. And look, I think use good judgment. Again, it's not distraction. It's interference where you cannot do your job effectively. That's what the courts are looking for. They will give you some leeway on this, you know, and so forth, but articulate the hell out of it. And finally, please, again, Rick gave you a link to our Cops and Cameras webinar. It's one of my favorite webinars. I'm a very strong advocate of the First Amendment. I know that it's a pain in the ass sometimes that people get to say this stuff and they show disrespect to law enforcement. I don't raise my kids like that, and I would not allow my family to talk to cops disrespectfully. However, at the end of the day, a free country allows discourse. So please use good judgment. Don't fall for this baiting issue. David asks, hey, how does civil marijuana and so forth occur, you know, happen in Washington? You got to get a warrant because, you know, in Washington, they do not have the federal motor vehicle exception. They need exigency. There is no exigency in most of these cases in Washington. You'd have to get a warrant to retrieve the evidence for the kids have possession of marijuana. All right, guys, I got to go. I got to go teach another class in about an hour. I got some drive time. I appreciate you. I guys hope that you enjoyed this class. Chris, I cannot thank you enough for joining me. Will you join me again?
Absolutely. Anytime.
I love it. And thank you so much for what you do for Blue to Gold. You are a phenomenal instructor, and I know that firsthand. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you. I'm out of here. Until next time, my friends, you guys stay safe.